You are listening to a series of sermons recorded on Sunday, November 11th, 2007, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
This is the time where we're going to hear from various members of the congregation sharing memories or stories of people and events which have inspired them. So I've asked them to I've given them the order. They know which order they're in. I will introduce each person by saying the words "we remember," which is also going to be the prayer. We're not going into the prayer when I say that. I'll introduce each person by "we remember." When the first person has finished sharing, I'm going to ask them to come to the front and light a candle that is a symbol of the act of peacemaking in a light of in a dark world of violence. After every person has spoken, and Evan is the last one, we will observe a minute of silence. Go from there out into the prayer. Memory is one of the primary handles we have to the roots of faith. Memory keeps the significance of past events relevant and meaningful for the present. On Remembrance Day, the country we live in asks us to remember the sacrifice of soldiers who have died and are dying in battle. What do we remember in our church? We remember.
Montenegro was the only country to lose its status as a country in World War I, as Serbia and Bosnia and Albania took chunks of it. But it's where my family grew up. My grandmother's family, her three sisters and her brother were all Serbian Orthodox. They were devout in a place where there were temples and shelters and grottos, miracle sites almost every mile along every trail along the way. It was a way to differentiate their territory from Muslim territory, from Catholic territory. Yet Serbs tended to take to communism, interestingly, as a way to achieve greater equality after years and years of inequality under Muslim, Venetian, Slovenian, and Austro-Hungarian rule. So in the town of Nikšić, where they grew up, it was one of the first destroyed during the war. My grandmother was born shortly after that war and survived the Second World War in Canada. But her three sisters were left behind, along with her brother, living through the Second World War as war came to the region again. Her youngest brother, Jedimo, the youngest in the family, her brother, Jedimo, was trained as an engineer, the only one to get an education. He was in charge of the waterworks of Nikšić, and also the Defense Forces Armory. His last official act when war was declared was to use ammunition in the magazine to blow up the dam and the power station upstream. He was captured by the Germans, sent to Jasenovac, which is a prison camp on the Sava River, and there he was killed, his body dumped in the Sava River to float into Serbia past Belgrade and eventually into the Danube and then to the Black Sea, like tens of thousands of others. More than 600,000 are reputed to have died at Jasenovac, but nobody knows how many because no records were kept. Mostly Croatian guards vied with each other for honors in the killing to create the bloodiest day among the prisoners. The winner killed almost 1,000 with only a knife. Even the German officers who oversaw nominally the camp were repulsed by the gore there. The tragedy is only whispered about today in Serbia. When the occasional voice is raised, it's only of blame or accusation. It's a time when lies served as accusation, evidence, proof, and judge over the lives of men and women. And it's only through the persistence and work of remaining Jews from the Balkans, because Jews, Roma, homosexuals, and communists and anti-fascists of every stripe were killed there. It's only through the work of Jews from the region that we have any record of this at all. So it's only through them that the apocryphal story told to me by my grandmother could be proved by finding a name on a list that my great-uncle, Yedimo Vukicevich, from the village of Strashevina in Nikšić, lives on in the memory of at least one of his descendants. I remember.
We remember.
We heard what Scripture has to say about war and peace. I want to share from our experience a few thoughts about war, peace, and Remembrance Day. I have mixed feelings when I pass the legionnaires, when I go to the bank or to the grocery store who sit in the entrance hall, soliciting donations for veterans and handing out poppies for Remembrance Day. I used to contribute and put the red poppy on my lapel when I was a public servant. I cannot do it anymore. If I think of it, our soldiers, our heroes, as we call them, who we remember on this day, were trained to kill. And the better they fulfilled this job, the more heroic they were thought of. Some of the trainers instilled their soldiers with hatreds towards a terrible enemy to make the killing a little easier and justified. Some were throwing this up and were proud and very efficient in killing as many as they could. Others did it unwillingly and were in agony. I know how that feels. I was one of them. World War I was supposed to end all future wars as we heard it, but the conditions of the armistice and the later peace arrangements bore the seed of resentment and out of which grew revenge. Where there's no willingness, no understanding to understand and to forgive, the cycle of starting wars will be repeated again and again. When I was still teaching, we were supposed to take our class to the assembly for the Remembrance Day ceremony. When we observed the silence, I meditated about this procedure. Why are we inflicting such pain and grief on each other? My thoughts went back to my own war experiences that I remember. To my grandparents, who burned in the flames of their farmhouse, which Russian soldiers had ignited. I thought of my sister, who never returned from the war, of my uncles and cousins, of the many refugees and civilians on both sides who were killed or maimed by enemy fire or by bombs. Why? Were these purposeful or meaningless sacrifices? When I returned to my classroom after one of these ceremonies, I noticed that my colleague, a social studies teacher, had not taken his class to the assembly. He had his own Remembrance Day discussion with his students about the atrocities of war, and he pointed out to them some of the unsung heroes of the war who tried to lessen the terror of war, like Field Marshal von Rundstedt, who disobeyed Hitler's order to destroy everything he left behind when he had to withdraw from Paris. Many historical monuments and homes still exist, and innocent people are still alive in Paris because of the courage of one officer who followed his moral conscience and made his own decision, for which he later had to pay with his life. There are many others who died, who did similar acts of humanity. Not all countries celebrate Remembrance Day. In Germany, they call it Volkstrauertag, People's Grieving Day. It's not on the same day as our Remembrance Day. And the church celebrates the last day of the church year as Ewigkeitssonntag or Eternity Sunday. We Mennonites have given Remembrance Day another meaning and call it Peace Sunday. If we want to have a more lasting peace in the world in which we live, We have to start in our own heart. We have to have peace within ourselves, with God and our neighbors. If this finds its practical application in our daily lives and spreads, peace will have a chance. We are members.
Let's light a candle, Helmut. We remember.
I grew up hearing stories of my grandfather and his brother who both fought in World War I. My grandfather was, they were both Italian and fought in the Italian army in the Bersaglieri, which were the sharpshooter, the kind of crack, highly trained team. And my great uncle never came back from that war. He was killed in an incident where my grandfather was the commander of a group soldiers who were in a trench, and he told them all to keep their heads down. And my great uncle was curious and stuck his head up and was killed. And thinking of the grief and the responsibility that my grandfather felt over that for his brother's death, he himself was then later wounded in that war. He was running a group of people that were taking out a German machine gun nest, and in the flight, in running of some sort, he lost his helmet, and he came upon a dead German soldier and took the helmet off of this soldier and put it on his own head. Now the German helmets were made of stronger stuff than the Italian helmets, and a few minutes later he was hit in the head by German fire, and it struck the helmet and broke a piece of it off and went, it drove it into his head. And He was wounded, and that was his eviction from the war, essentially. But he would have died if it had been the Italian helmet. So I look at those two incidents as it has always troubled me why some people are protected with seemingly divine protection and others are not, and how haphazard the whole element of death in war is. And then also the irony of whose people, whose side you're on. I always grew up sort of thinking that the Italians had been the enemy, and I didn't really understand the whole World War I thing. I guess they were on the right side or something. But even in World War II, they were, quote, the enemy from the American perspective, and yet we descended from these people. So that also fed into my desire to, my preparation to become quite enamored with the Mennonite peace way of living. My grandfather, when he immigrated to the United States, a couple of his cousins had married Quaker women, and so he became a Quaker. And I never knew my grandfather. He died before I was born. But I like to think that perhaps part of the reason he was so easily brought into the arm of the Quaker faith was that his experience in the war had perhaps soured him to that whole thing, and he saw peace and pacifism as a better option. But I don't know. He never shared that. Or my father never grew up. He grew up Quaker, but he never really spoke a lot about the pacifism side of it. So those memories have inspired me to never want to see war again and to be disturbed by it when it's happening.
We remember.
I speak from a slightly different perspective, I guess, but like as Helmut, I was involved. Remembrance Day has great significance for me. I was involved in the Royal Canadian Army Medical Corps as a non-combatant soldier in World War II. Canadian men who did not want to take up arms but wanted to be involved in bringing peace to the world had the opportunity to enlist in voluntary service, which had been arranged by leaders of the Mennonite community and the Canadian government. The choices of services for these men were hospital orderlies, forestry, farm workers to replace sons who were serving overseas, and the non-combatant Royal Canadian Army Medical Corps. My choice of service was the Medical Corps. We were trained to serve on the battlefield, serving and rescuing wounded soldiers and transporting them to the field hospitals in the area. 2 days before I was scheduled to leave for overseas, my home company was transferred to the Montreal Military Hospital to attend to wounded returned soldiers. I continued serving there until after the war ended and my eventual discharge at the end of the year 1945. But the vivid memories of this experience are unforgettable. I can still see a patient in my care who lost both legs and had endured 33 surgeries at the time I left the hospital. And there were many others who had suffered serious burns and other ravages of war. Normally, I attend memorial services on November the 11th and recall the tremendous cost of war, especially in terms of human suffering, which I've seen myself. It makes me thankful to every day that we live in peace. I remember.
We remember.
Yes, during our 1991 to 93, and you remember that's the time the wall came down from in between Soviet Union and the rest of Europe. During our assignment at assisting Mennonite migrants from the USSR to Germany, I was called to the Lutheran Mission Office and asked to assist an elderly gentleman. He was 90 years old, had crippled hands and feet. The hands had been broken during prison torture by being crushed in the hinges of the steel gate. Now he needed help with documents and connecting his relatives. After 2 hours, we had managed to reach his relatives and made the arrangements for their meeting, and we had completed some unfinished immigration documents. When it was all done, the man was practically dancing with glee and thankfulness. He had expected that it would take 2 weeks to accomplish what we had done in 2 hours. What was even more impressive was the total absence of bitterness or hatred toward the people who had caused the 70 years of misery he had suffered under communism. Again and again, we met people in the camp with similar backgrounds who displayed the same sweet spirit of forgiveness and absence and an absence of bitterness and cynicism. The world is suffering from people who cannot forgive and who feel it's a matter of family or clan honor to revenge past wrongs. I remember these people.
He remembers.
A number of years ago, Tina and I attended an international armaments exhibit and fair. Tina asked me why I wanted to go. I said I wanted to see how the merchants of death and destruction marketed their wares. One booth immediately caught my attention. It had a big slogan above it. It said, "The miracle is all around you." So I wondered where among the weapons of death and destruction should we find a miracle? Maybe getting Canada, Switzerland, United States, Israel, China, France, and 20 other countries together for a peaceful arms exhibit was a miracle. We have been selected for the Trinity Team. That's a slogan for Singapore's anti-submarine weapons. And being on that Trinity Team would not rank as miraculous. Hydro-Emex explosives. The pamphlet says they contain no poisonous or hazardous material. Nitroglycerin headaches are eliminated and safety improved. That must be the miracle, an explosive that has no hazardous material and no headache afterwards. Then a surprise, an MCC booth. MCC means Military Communications Calculator, a Canadian manufacturer. The Tornado jet fighter boasts that there is a reduction in required skill levels of operators. Does that mean any fool can fly one? Is that the miracle? The miracle was all around you. We went back to the booth with that slogan, and I casually inquired from the promoter whether the phrase had any theological significance. And he laughed. We managed a smile. I don't know who thought it up, he says. It's pretty catchy, though, eh? The miracle was all around you. From DuPont, fiber stronger than steel that is used to make fire-resistant clothing to resist the heat of battle and incendiary bombs. When dressed in DuPont's outfit, the miracle is all around you. I would prefer to remember the miracle of peace.
We remember.
My story comes from the Vietnam War days. To the best of our knowledge, Janice and I's our ancestry is traced back. Know of no one who was a direct ancestor who fought in battle. We did a lot of fleeing. As the Vietnam War settled in and I was of draft age and went before the draft board, being an intellectual, I was able to work around the rather dull-minded draft people on the board and got my deferment. But not everyone was so lucky. When we lived in New York City, we met a friend called Paul. He was done with his education, unlike me, so he couldn't get a deferment from draft for that. Yet he was convinced that pacifism, the more he thought about it, was right. He also felt, and he was a gentle soul, that it would not be possible for him to kill anybody. So he earnestly tried to get out of the draft. He probably could have been a pacifist, except for one thing. He was hopelessly honest, and he said, "I've thought and thought and thought, but I do not believe there is a supreme being." And that was the one requirement in the United States for deferment as a pacifist. Holding to his integrity and the reality of his beliefs, he was drafted. He was a gifted musician, horn player, and so he was able to get into the military band and accompany soldiers coming home and White House events and all sorts of things. But there were a number like Paul in the band, and they started raising difficulties and making difficulty and showing up at peace rallies, even though they were in the military, and trying to work against their draft status. And eventually the entire Army band was disbanded as a disciplinary action, and each one of them was sent over to Vietnam. Paul's solution was probably not unique. It was certainly illegal. He told me before he would go, and he told me after he came back. I don't understand guns, but apparently there are safety latches on guns. And he had his set, so that even if he was in battle, he would not take that off, so that even if in the heat of battle he felt it was necessary to fire, he would not be able to fire. He thought it would be just one more step before he went against his conscience during moments when he was able to think it through. He himself was wounded and came back to New York, and I met up with him again. I was impressed by his solution to his dilemma and by the integrity, most of all by his refusal to kill somebody